You're listening to Bob, Dave, and more on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
The 5 o'clock refresh is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer. Well, we've had a little bit of injury news happening with your Seattle Seahawks as they get set to take on the Cleveland Browns. And here to talk about it with us, you read his stuff on the Seattle Times website. You get the physical paper like Jim does, wherever you get it. Follow him on Twitter. Bob Condotta is with us on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. Bob, how are you, man?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing good. Obviously, there seem to be some concerns. We've got injury news. Ethan Posick is now on the injured list. You've got questions surrounding Dwayne Brown. DJ Fluker. Doesn't look like those guys are going to play. How do you imagine this offensive line looking when they get out there on the field Sunday?
Yeah, you know, Dwayne Brown is sort of the new thing. It's not a new thing, but you know, I figured all week Fluker's not going to play. I mean, a hamstring and all that. He's probably going to be out a couple of weeks, maybe. But Dwayne Brown has played through the biceps thing. You know, this is the injury he had that he came out of the New Orleans game, but he's played through it the last 2 weeks. And so I think we all just, even though he hadn't practiced all week, I think we all just assumed that it would be like it's been the last couple of weeks where he hasn't practiced and then he's played. But, you know, Pete Carroll saying today that it's not responding the way they hoped. And, you know, he was questionable this time last week. Now he's doubtful. And so obviously it's an issue. So maybe they need to give him a week or two off here to get that figured out so they don't risk losing him for the whole year. It might be part of the thought process. You know, if Dwayne Brown can't play, then they'll put George Fant on left tackle. And if Fluker can't play, then Jamarco Jones will start at right guard. So you'll have, you know, Jamarco Jones will be making his first career start and George Fant would be making his first start at left tackle since 2016. He did start 10 games, I think, at left tackle that year. So it's something he's done before, but he hasn't played, you know, he hasn't had to play a whole lot at left tackle since then. He did play about 25 snaps or so against the Saints after Dwayne Brown went out of that game.
Hey, Bob, I guess you feel pretty good about Jamarco Jones taking over for Fluker in light of how he played in the last game there against the Rams. But what about George Fant? What are fair expectations for him?
Yeah, I mean, and you're right. And of course, starting can be a little bit of a different thing. And maybe when a team knows you're going to be playing and all that, you know, you do got to continue to sort of show that. But I think they were very happy with what they got out of Jamarco Jones. And, you know, guard might be a really good spot for him too. You know, some of the things he said about it this week and some of the things the offensive line coach has said about it and all that, you know, he might be a guy that really has a future there. And they've got two veteran guards that have 1 year contracts. So that might be something that's in their thought process as they go forward with this. You know, Dwayne Brown, I think, is one of the most valuable guys on the team. And it's sometimes hard to quantify that with offensive linemen. But, you know, I think he's, when people looked last year for reasons why Seattle was better on offense, I always thought that Dwayne Brown got overlooked in that conversation. And I think he's been hugely valuable in just how he communicates with Russell and how he gets the rest of the line kind of set up and organized and just, you know, just his whole demeanor about everything. So, you know, I think it's more the loss of him than Fant. I think George Fant is a good player who can come in and do a good job, but I don't know that he can replace everything that Dwayne Brown brings. But, you know, for maybe a game or two, you can get by with it. And that might be part of, again, their thought here is that maybe they do just need to give Dwayne Brown a week or two off to make sure he gets past this thing. You know, the other sort of domino effect is they really like the role George Fant has, the eligible lineman and all of that. And so you saw them make the move with Ethan Posick so they could get Jordan Ruiz and Jacob Hollister on the roster. And you know, I think they did that so that they can have that, so they have the flexibility there with other linemen so they can still go with their jumbo sets and have, you know, two tight ends and basically three tight ends out there at time if they want, which is something they like to do a lot. So for sure, you're going to have some different people in some different roles Sunday and going against Myles Garrett and what's a pretty good, what on paper is a good Cleveland defensive line anyway with Sheldon Richardson and Olivier Vernon, you know, that could be a real challenge.
Boy, that's a thin offensive line though, right? I know that you mentioned and you tweeted out that they promoted Jordan Roos from the practice squad, but you know, if somebody goes down, he gets thrown. You have no depth. Jordan Simmons is still hurt. Do we expect to see Phil Haynes then rather quickly, or what do you expect to happen?
Yeah, well, I mean, you saw Jory Hunt. Yeah, you're right. You just sort of get between they did that. And, that, you know, and adding Hollister allows them to, you know, you can use Will Disley and Luke Wilson and an awful lot in blocking positions and stuff like that. Phil Haynes can't come back until next week, but I mean, he hasn't practiced in, you know, since June. So I think I would temper expectations just a little bit for how quickly we're going to see Phil Haynes make a big leap. But he can come off the PUP list next week. He could then practice for 3 weeks before they even have to decide whether to put him on the roster or put him back on IR for the rest of the year. And so that's certainly something they will look at, and I'm sure is in their plans or something that can help out down the road. But you're right. I mean, for Sunday, if Dwayne Brown and DJ Fluker can't play, then you've got seven offensive linemen. So you'd have your five starters plus Joey Hunt and then Jordan Roos. And so particularly if they lost a tackle there, you know, that starts to get somewhat problematic because both your backups are basically kind of interior guys but Joey Hunt has played a little bit of tackle before. So I think he would be the guy if they had to get to that route. But, you know, the other thing they could do is just have Dwayne Brown be active, but have him not play, you know, go into it with the idea that he's not going to play. But if you get to a real emergency situation, then maybe he can still, you know, help you and bail you out. So they've got some things they can do with this, and I'm sure they're probably some of this may go down to Sunday morning while they sort this all out and figure out exactly who can play and how much people can help them.
Chris Carson was on the injured list yesterday with some sort of a shoulder issue and limited in practice. And then he looks good to go today, though. He's not on the list today. But Penny is questionable with a hamstring. And then you got C.J. Procise, Travis Homer, perhaps. How do you think they're going to ration out the carries this week?
Yeah, well, if Penny can't play, you know, he practiced today. He was listed as a full participant. I watched a little bit of practice, and he was out there running around. And you know, Friday's always a really light day, so it's hard to know how much to make of that sometimes. But you know, he looked okay, so he might be able to go. But you know, they're showing just a ton of faith in Chris Carson. I mean, I was surprised that Carson played as much as he did against the Rams after having gotten as many carries as he did the previous week against Arizona. So I don't know that they go into these games thinking they have to ration out carries to much of anybody else other than Chris Carson a whole lot right now. I think they really are, you know, he will have had, you know, 10 days basically having the little bit of a mini break there after the Rams game. So, you know, Procise fits well, obviously, as sort of the third down, a 2-minute back, and that's what we've seen him primarily this season when he has played. So they can maybe go into it thinking that he can spell Carson for a series or two in that role if they need to. And maybe Penny's just healthy enough to play a little bit. And then we haven't seen Travis Homer play running back yet. You know, he does a lot on special teams, and his role has sort of increased on special teams the last few weeks. But, you know, maybe one of these days they get him out there as a running back a little bit as well if they need him.
As far as Russell Wilson goes, you got to rack your brain to think of when you've seen him be more efficient, more decisive, more accurate. I mean, he's completing over 70% of his passes. Is this the best you've seen him play, or would you still look at that half season where he and Doug Baldwin went nuts for, I can't remember the number, 15 touchdowns in the second half of the season? What's the best you've seen of him?
Yeah, I mean, that's the only other time, is that 2015 season. I mean, he's had five straight games of passer rating over 100. The only other time he's done that was that stretch in 2015 when he just, you know, was just so amazing down the stretch there. And, you know, I think it was 24 touchdowns in the final eight games of the season. And so that would be it. I think in some ways this maybe is even more impressive because I'm not sure the total supporting cast around him maybe is as good as it was then, or, you know, certainly the way the team plays. I mean, he had some games in 2015 when you still had a team that, you know, finished the season as the best defense statistically in the NFL. So they had some of those games late when Russell was playing really well, where they also got big leads, and then it was sort of easy to kind of dial it back and you know, you kind of have these big games where it's easy for your stats to end up looking easier anyway, for your stats to end up looking really good. I'm sort of more impressed by this because they've needed basically everything he could do in all of these games. You know, these have all been pretty tight games. You know, even the Arizona game, you know, got sort of tight there a little bit, and he had to lead that last drive to put him back up comfortably. But you know, three of the wins are by 2 points or less, and just the way, you know, teams are coming after him the way they are, and he's having to get out of trouble. And, you know, he's really, you know, he hasn't thrown an interception yet, obviously. He's not taken sacks for as big a losses as I think he did at sometimes earlier in his career as well. You know, so he's I mean, his sort of mistake avoidance is almost what's as impressive as everything else here. You know, you watch NFL games and so many of them come down to 2, 3, 4 plays, and oftentimes it's a mistake by a quarterback, and Russell's just not doing that right now, and I think that's really been the big difference in a lot of these games they're winning.
Do you think it's crazy, but no interceptions through 5 games, the NFL record held by Rodgers and Tom Brady with only 2 during the single season. Do you think he's got a legitimate shot at that at this point?
Well, I mean, he's only thrown 4 in his last 19 games. If you go back to last year, and you know, one of those was the really fluky play against Minnesota where he sort of just, you know, was running around and kind of just threw it up for grabs. And one was sort of in a desperation situation against the Chargers that actually turned into a pick 6. But, you know, I think a throw he probably doesn't throw if they're not behind, and he's just kind of trying to do whatever he can to get him back in the game. And one was the interception that was a tip in the end zone when they were way ahead in London against the Raiders. So, you know, even the interceptions he's had, you could all sort of say that maybe that those don't happen. And, you know, they're all sort of Russell maybe taking a chance that he doesn't always need to take or whatever. So it's that part of it is what's really amazing to me, is how he is able to just have avoided that. I mean, I think he's maybe only thrown one pass all year that you really thought, you know, maybe could have been picked off. I mean, it's not like, you know, he's gotten lucky or anything in a lot of these. He's just been really on it, you know, just making good decisions. And then the accuracy, I mean, completing 73% of passes. And, you know, there's been some times when they've gone with sort of the short passing game in there, but he hasn't thrown an interception, and he also has a 9.0 yards per attempt, mm-hmm. which is the third best in the NFL. You know, so usually, you know, the longer completions you're throwing, there's a little bit more of a risk of interception there sometimes. And, you know, but Russell's not throwing picks, but he's also throwing with a high degree of making something out of it when he does throw it. So, you know, he's the highest paid player in the NFL for a reason, but, you know, right now the Seahawks are getting full value out of that contract.
You think Pete Carroll has instructed his players to make sure they shake Baker Mayfield's hand at the coin toss?
Yeah, I mean, that was one of the – I guess we all will have to make sure we watch. It's not just the first handshake, but it's the second handshake, right? Because he did shake everybody's hand the first time, the second time around. So, you know, Russell actually got to know Baker Mayfield a little bit when Russell did that QB to QB show a couple years ago for ESPN. Baker Mayfield was one of the guys that was featured on that. So they did spend part of the day together filming that show and everything. So, you know, you'll have Russell and Bobby Wagner and Nico Thorpe, and then I guess whoever the game captain is out there. So we'll see if Baker Mayfield shakes everybody's hands. But, you know, it's interesting that, you know, the Seahawks haven't, I guess that they don't seem to be as involved in those kind of things the way they used to be anymore.
Bob Condotta from the Seattle Times is our guest here with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle. Where are you at with Baker Mayfield? Do you like him?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I mean, I don't. The sort of being brash stuff. I don't. That doesn't bother me at all. I mean, you know, what I like about him from that standpoint is he doesn't back down from it. You know, he doesn't. He doesn't feel like he does a whole lot of saying you guys quoted me out of context or any of that kind of stuff. I mean, he sort of says it, and then he kind of lives by it. And I thought a couple of his responses to things this week, like the response about the Sherman thing, and when he said, you know, this is a rare time the video kind of backed me up, you know, which was sort of a playful reference to the video that got him in trouble a couple of years ago. You know, and he had to come back about Nick Bosa and the flag thing, and he said that was a long time for him to sit around thinking about a game he lost. You know, so he seems to take this stuff in stride, and I think he realizes that, you know, in Cleveland a little bit, that's a franchise that's sort of starving for anything. You know, that's a really loyal fan base that's had nothing at all to feel good about for a long time, and at least this team is, you know, kind of entered the season as a really entertaining team, and I think Mayfield at least embraces that part of it. Obviously, at some point, you gotta play well to go along with that, or you know, it kind of starts to seem sort of empty, but. You know, I mean, he's a year and a half into his career, so I'd be really hesitant to make huge determinations on how good he's going to be yet. You know, he showed a lot of really positive signs last year. Their offensive line has been really bad so far. You know, a lot of the plays last week that I think were plays he didn't have great chances on where he looked bad. And then, you know, the one pass he throws in the end zone, if the guy catches it, and if they make that it would have been 14-10 then, right? And instead it became 21-3 about a minute and a half later. and the game got out of hand. I mean, that's how close a lot of these games can sometimes be, even when they turn out to be routes in the end. So, you know, it wouldn't have taken much for that to turn around. So, I think Cleveland is probably a little better, obviously, than they showed in that game. I watched almost all of their game against the Ravens, and they looked like world beaters on that day. And that was against the Ravens defense, you know, that added Earl Thomas and, you know, for a couple of games looked like one of the best in the NFL, and Cleveland made them look silly on that day. So, you know, Cleveland might still just be a team with a lot of young players and a lot of new pieces and still just trying to fight itself.
Pete Carroll seems to think the pass rush is on the verge of breaking out, but I'm a little skeptical because they've only had 5 sacks in the last 4 games. Do you agree with Pete, though, on that one?
Well, it's interesting because he's been very self-referential about that. He was again today about how he knows he keeps saying this, but he really believes it's going to happen at some point. You know, they certainly invested a lot in Jadeveon Clowney, who I think has played pretty well, and then Ziggy Ansah, who I think has been more of the issue, really trying to get him going, and then, you know, trying to get the younger guys going. You know, they're going to get Jaron Reed back next week, and that should help quite a bit. So I think that's part of what he's thinking is, you know, in a week or two, if you got Jaron Reed out there along with Ziggy Ansah and Jadeveon Clowney, you know, that's 2 former Pro Bowl players and another guy who really probably should have been last year, Jaron Reed. And so, you know, how much better can it get than throwing those guys out there and hoping that it really starts to come together? So, but I did write for my thing for Sunday, you know, this sort of feels like the week that starts to have to happen, right? I mean, the whole idea that Ansah hasn't had time to get into shape. Well, he's played basically 2 full games now, and Clowney, sure, it's a new system, but this is game 6, so you will have played about 40% of your season after Sunday. I mean, at some point, you gotta sort of figure out how to work all those guys in together and make it work. So, this is not a very good offensive line on paper, and we saw San Francisco, Chase Baker Mayfield all over the place. So this does feel like the week it really has to happen if it's going to happen.
Bob, do you think we put too much of an expectation on the return of Jaron Reed? I mean, he had a huge season last year, 10.5 sacks from an interior lineman. I mean, that's great. I didn't, even before the suspension and all that, I was saying I don't think that's a fair number to hold him to. If he came up with less than that, I wasn't going to go, oh, man, what a step back year. I think that was just turned into a very fortunate year. But it feels like everybody's sort of marking down the day that he comes back, and it's just going to be a night and day difference on that line. And I don't know if that's a fair expectation of an interior lineman.
Well, yeah, I would agree with you on that. I mean, nobody should hold up the 10.5 sacks. It's like he's got to keep doing this or it's a disappointing year for him. I mean, yeah, there's only been 2 other tackles in the history of the Seahawks that have done that. They're each in the Hall of Fame, Cortez Kennedy and John Randall. I mean, that's a really high standard. But I think it just makes the whole rotation better, you know, instead of going...
Right.
You know, like Quentin Jefferson has had to play a lot of tackle, a lot more tackle than he's played. I think that Pittsburgh game, he played like 80% of the snaps, and almost all of them were a tackle. You know, the Seahawks, again, you know, Pete Carroll will talk about it all the time. In 2013, when they won the Super Bowl, you know, they had basically a 7-man rotation. Nobody played more than 57% of the snaps, but nobody played fewer than about 45. You know, you sort of had fresh, really good players out there all the time. And, you know, you could come in the fourth quarter and stick in like Clinton McDonald, who maybe barely played, and suddenly he can, you know, dominate a tired offensive lineman on the other side. That's the sort of thing. So that's what Reed will really bring him. So not only, I think, would he be the best tackle that they'll have thrown in there, but, you know, it also just kind of makes everybody else a little better because, you know, maybe they're not being asked to do as much or have to play as much, that sort of thing. And so it just makes your overall rotations better. You know, Al Woods has been real solid in starting for Jaron Reed, but he's not the pass rusher, Jaron Reed is. He's much more sort of a run stuffer, plugger kind of guy. And so I think maybe you get him into a better role that way as well, where, he's just kind of playing primarily on early downs and all that kind of stuff. And so, again, it's just sort of that domino effect where I think you put a guy in at the top of the rotation and everybody is just a little bit better off because of it.
Ultimately, Bob, at the end of the season, if the Seahawks don't make it to the Super Bowl and win the Lombardi Trophy, I'm sitting here thinking of the reason why might be their pass defense, and they're 26th in the league, giving up 271 passing yards, and I don't know, maybe it's a reflection on the pass rush not being consistent enough, but I just wonder about the 4 guys on the back end. Do you think that's the biggest concern right now?
Yeah, again, guys miss field goals and all that, but if Greg Zuerlein, you know, he should have made that field goal, obviously. If he makes that, that's all we would have been talking about all week, is how easily the Rams went down the field on him. And, you know, even after they get a delay, then they basically just get all those yards back plus the five more or whatever on the next play. You know, the Seahawks didn't seem to offer up a whole lot of resistance on that drive at all. And that's not what, you know, we're used to seeing the Seahawks teams of past do. So I think it definitely is. And to me, it was really interesting when Pete Carroll said this week that, you know, the safety spot was sort of still up for competition. I think maybe everybody thought after that game that, you know, Tedder Thompson, the interception he made and all that, okay, this has sort of solidified his role. I still expect Tedder Thompson to start this week, but I think it showed that, you know, I think maybe that was a little bit of a subtle signal from Pete. You know, he volunteered that, that, you know, hey, I'm sort of with you that these guys got to keep playing better. And nothing is really completely solved there yet. So yeah, Andy Dalton threw for 418 yards. I think in week one, he hasn't come close to throwing for that against anybody else they've played since then. And, you know, even though the Seahawks really shut down Todd Gurley in the running game and all that kind of stuff, and the Rams just sort of adjusted, we're like, we'll just throw it every play. And, you know, what was it? The Rams, I think six of their last eight drives went, you know, 58 yards or longer. And, you know, the Seahawks weren't stopping them at all. The Rams just sort of, you know, the fumble and a missed field goal. And if those two things don't happen late in the game, you know, the Rams might win that game by 10 points or whatever. So, I think it definitely is. And that's going to be a big thing this week. If they don't get the pass rush, then, you know, Odell Beckham is sort of just sitting there, you know, it sort of feels like he's due. I know everybody in Cleveland, but he's due for a big breakout game. He hasn't really had one yet. And then you still got Jarvis Landry, who's a really solid player as well. And you know, Mayfield, if you go back to last year, has shown an ability to put up really big numbers at times. So, yeah, I'm with you there, especially from the defensive standpoint. The run defense has gotten a lot better this year. But I do think when they play really good quarterbacks, which they haven't done a lot of, you know, they sort of have, I guess, twice this year. You know, they've given up numbers. So I think that for sure is still an issue.
Good stuff, Bob. We really appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll be talking again soon. Thanks so much.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, you guys.
There he is, Bob Condotta from the Seattle Times, spending a few minutes with us talking Seahawk football. Meanwhile, we asked you this question earlier. We're going to have Jim expand on this. Who's got it tougher in the desert this weekend? Because both college teams are there, the Cougs and the Huskies, both in the desert, taking on Arizona and ASU. Who's got it tougher? We'll tell you next. It is Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob, Dave, and Moore.
Streaming live through the Alaska Airlines studio on the 710 Sports app.
Now, here are your hosts, Bob Stelton, Dave Wyman, and Jim Moore.
The 5 o'clock refresh is brought to you by Frost Brewed Coors Light, Washington's most refreshing beer. All right, Jim, we got two college teams in the desert. You got your Cougs, your beloved Cougs, taking on ASU, and you got the Huskies who are on their heels. That was not a good performance against Stanford. And they go in there and they take on a team that seems to have turned things around. I remember asking our guy Curtis Rogers a couple weeks ago about the Wildcats. Are they any good? And he's just like, ugh. You know, he was pretty down on them, and now I think they've, what, won four in a row, something like that. They seem to be heading the right direction. Huskies feel like they might be catching them at a bad time. Who's got a tougher go of it this weekend?
Yeah, I think the Cougs have a tougher go of it. I think ASU, and I say that mainly because I think the Cougs are in a little worse shape right now than Washington. I know Washington's reeling. It's going to be interesting, though, an 8 o'clock kickoff there in Tucson to see how Washington reacts, because there's been a lot of turmoil. It was one thing, you know, you lose the Cal game, and I guess you could chalk it up to, like, well, Cal's got a really good defense. The Lightning delay. There were a lot of different factors.
You could explain that one away,
but the Stanford one, going into that game, Stanford, they were down at the bottom both. Typically, Stanford's good defensively, and they've been okay offensively. They're down offensively, too, with a backup quarterback, might have been a third stringer, and yet they dominated that entire game from start to finish. And then Jacob Eason, you see him against BYU. I thought, after seeing him that day, I thought, oh, okay. Well, I thought maybe that kid from Lake Stevens was overhyped, and I didn't think that after that. And it was just strange to see him struggle the way that he did against Stanford, going 5 for 5 on the opening drive,
right,
taking Washington right down the field, and then going 11 for 31 the rest of the way.
And the defense on top of it couldn't get off the field. They couldn't get off the field. I mean, it felt like one of those games where they didn't really do anything well.
Yeah, they've lost nine starters, but this is generally, Bob, in the past, before you got here, this is when I insert that Jimmy Lake is the defensive coordinator. And if he's such a genius, and if he's worth getting paid over $1 million a year, why couldn't he stop that Stanford offense that every other opponent has been able to stop?
That's a fair question. I don't know.
I want answers from Jimmy Lake if I'm a Husky fan, because I thought he was a genius.
Yeah, not every drive resulted in a touchdown for Stanford, but they had the ball for so long. They just couldn't stop them. They couldn't get off the field, and you just saw the time of possession was completely out of whack, and you just walked away from that game going, ugh, what was that? And I root for the Huskies and the Cougs. I'm one of those. I didn't go to either school, so I don't truly have a preference. Whoever's got the most on the line, that's the one I'm rooting for. But
who do you root for in the Apple Cup?
Whoever's got the most on the line.
Not a good answer.
Well, I mean, listen, if the Cougs have a better record and they've got a better bowl hanging in the balance, then I'm going for them. If that's true of the Huskies, I know it's not what you want, but
that's lame.
Sorry, man.
That's okay. I still love you anyway. What I think is going to be interesting, I'm reading about Washington, the Arizona game, Khalil Tate, all these different things. A lot of reasons to like Arizona in this game. But I think Washington still has the better team. They're favored by 6 in the game. And yet, I just wonder about emotionally, how are they going? Washington every year, at least this is what their fans think. Oh, yeah, we're going to be playing. We'll be in the Final Four. And they did make it that one year. And we're going to be in a New Year's Day bowl game. We're going to be 11-1. We're going to be 10-2, whatever the case might be. But now you're really at a point. The players, I mean, these guys are basically playing for – they still have an outside shot, I guess, at the Pac-12 North title, but you need a lot of things to happen, starting with a win over Arizona. You got Oregon coming to Husky Stadium next week, so it could be a lot of teams knocking each other off along the way here, and so Washington might still have a chance at that. But typically, if you're with the Huskies, you got higher goals, and your goals are shot down right now.
Absolutely.
Right now, you're looking at the Cheez-It Bowl, or you might be looking at, you know what the Sun Bowl's doing? They got Frosted Flakes sponsoring the Sun Bowl. It's called the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl this year.
I can't keep up with all the bowls. There's too many bowls. It's nonsense. But, all right, now give me the Cougs story here. And I know you brought up yesterday we had Jessamyn McIntyre on the show, sideline reporter extraordinaire for the Cougs, who was hearing none of it. She was not taking any of that nonsense about heat being a factor. Now, you're being sincere. You think that actually could be problematic for the Cougs.
I was being sincere. I can see why someone would shoot that down, though, because the Cougs, when they practiced in August, certainly it was in the 90s over there in Pullman and down in Lewiston. But here it is, October, and I think it's going to be 90 degrees at kickoff. I was surprised to see that they were playing a 12:30 game in Tempe in October, and I know it happens, but you assume that usually when you play down there, it's going to be a night game, so it'll be cooler. I do think it will be a factor, and we'll find out. Maybe it won't be, but I just wonder about our defense. And Tracy Clase, the defensive coordinator, it sounds like he resigned. I thought when we first heard that Clase was out as defensive coordinator that maybe it was one of those things where he'd like, wink, wink, he was actually fired. But Mike Leach, when he talked to reporters, he said, well, you guys know as much about it as I do. And so Clase ends up leaving. And
are you glad? Do you think he was?
I'm not sure.
Was he the problem defensively?
No, I don't think he was the problem defensively. But I mean, last year we were fine defensively. This year, not so much. Everybody saw that UCLA game and what happened with them scoring 50 points in 19 or 20 minutes, and then following it up, going down to Utah. That was a tough spot too, and Utah scoring 38 points, but. Maybe it'll be a good thing, and it sounds crazy, but I think maybe the kids will all rally together. They've made some changes on the depth chart, different kids playing different positions, and I'm hoping that we'll see a renewed, revitalized Cougar defense because, boy, they certainly, well, everybody saw that they hit
the ball. Well, you were on that early. I remember asking you, like I asked Curtis, hey, what do you think of the Cougs this year? And you're like, man, I'm worried about the defense.
Well, mainly after the Northern Colorado game.
Right.
Because that's a team that you usually just, pile it up and you don't even think much about it. But they gave up more than 200 rushing yards to a Northern Colorado team there at Martin Stadium. And that, I kind of looked at that and I thought, that's not good. So we'll see. And, the passing offense didn't get it going there. The air raid against Utah. That's typical, though. Utah always having a good defense. So we'll see.
Yeah,
if they
Utah's
can,
a good team.
I always,
right?
You know, Sparky and Tempe and, you know, Forks Up or whatever they call it, or Fear the Fork down there, whatever the heck it is down there. it just seems like we don't play that well down there.
Fear the Fork, I typically, Forks Up,
yeah.
Whatever.
Man, I remember going, the last time I was down there, I went with my daughter during her senior year, and it was really fun going to the Cougar pregame party at a Mexican joint and then taking one of those bikes over there. And I think it was Leach's first year, and boy, we really got it handed to us. And then there was a game, too, the Ryan Leaf year when we were unbeaten and we went down there. And it's just, it's always been a tough place for him to play. But
it's a different team now, Jim.
It is. I know it's a different team.
That's why I didn't buy the Stanford thing. People, it's tough for him there. It's tough for him in this building. And I'm thinking the turnover in college is unlike anything, right? It's always a new team. It's always a new team and often a new coaching staff. So to say, well, there's this history here in this building, I'm like, that doesn't apply. That doesn't apply, does it? You can't talk about a game that took place, you know, 15 years ago and say, well, here's an example of why they don't play well here.
Well, what do you mean I can't say that?
Well, you can, but I just don't think it holds water. It's a different team and often a different
coaching
staff.
Bob, have you noticed I say a lot of things on this show that don't hold water, okay? But no, historically, I think most Cougs would agree with me when you think about places that you really don't want to play. It's at ASU, and you love going down there. It's a fun road trip. All the Cougs that are going down there, they're going to have a great time. You can even double down. I think it's a great trip for everybody. You go down there, you go to the Cougs game at 12:30. You get out of there at 4 o'clock and drive 2 hours down to Tucson. You can watch the Husky-Arizona game, too.
Yeah, and you get into some nice weather.
Yeah.
On top of all of it, it feels like summer out there where we didn't really have summer here, Jim.
No, we didn't. But if I had to guess, I think Washington's going to bounce back, and I think the Cougs are going to win, too. I think everybody's going to be happy this weekend.
So you think both Washington schools win?
Both Washington schools win.
All right. And somebody's on my side here. Bob, I went to Central Washington. I, too, am Switzerland when it comes to Washington football.
Okay. I don't care who you root for, except for in the Apple Cup. I'm going to try and get you on our side every year.
If the Cougs have more on the line, hanging in the balance with a win, then I will root for them. If the Huskies have more hanging in the balance for there, if they win, I'll be pulling for them.
What if the Cougs went into the game 0-11? They'd have more hanging in the balance.
Yeah, I'd root for the Huskies.
Would you?
Well, yeah, because what is a one win going to mean to
you? I'm going to want Danny back. Okay.
At least you know he's definitively rooting against the Cougs. There's still a chance I could root for him. All right, we're going to come back, figure out exactly what it is we learned today. I'm Bob, Dave, and Moore, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Wow, you sure know a lot of stuff.
It's great to learn
because knowledge is power.
It's time for What We Learn, brought to you by Carter VW. DJ, did we learn anything today?
We learned a couple things today.
Okay, all right.
First, we learned that saying Go Cougs is fine for any situation.
Did you say Go Cougs in your wedding vows?
Yeah, I think we sang the Cougar Fight song.
Did you?
Yeah.
I figured you'd find a way to squeeze in Go Cougs in your actual vows.
Bob, I'll be out on a trail in the middle of nowhere in the Cougar Mountain Regional Park, and it'll just occur to me to say Go Cougs to no one on the trail.
River.
Say, you know, it'd be a hill in front of me, and I'm going, God, Go Cougs. Come on, Jim, you can get up this.
If you would have gone to UW the way you thought as a young guy, what would you be saying? Bow down? Would you be just walking around saying that all the time?
Go Dogs, probably, okay. I guess. I don't know. I'm glad I came to my senses, though. Yeah, I'd have probably been thinking, man, why didn't I go to WSU? It sure seems like everybody had more fun over there than what I had here on Montlake.
Do you ever say Go Cougs unwittingly? Like, it just is, it's such a part of your vernacular. It comes out everywhere. We could be having a conversation about the weather, and you'll throw, yeah, this rain's getting me, Bob. Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Yeah, you'll just throw it in there.
It's one of my favorite things about being a Coug is, and anytime I see the Cougar logo when somebody's wearing it, it's just
a bonding moment.
It goes without saying, you just say Go Cougs to that person, and it bothers me when they don't say Go Cougs back. You don't say, we all learned this as freshmen when we went to WSU, that when someone said Go Cougs to you, you say Go Cougs back. You don't say like, yeah, right on. No. You say Go Cougs. Okay.
Feel like you've got to school them. Yeah, you're doing it wrong.
It just makes me happy. You know how you have a lot of regrets in life? You look back and you go, man, I wish I'd done this. I wish I'd done that. And when I look back on my 4 years in college, I'm so glad. I've never had a regret about going to Washington State.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Well, next we learn that sometimes we may not understand what we're trying to say.
Well, the flip side of momentum is, like, if you think momentum in a negative way, that the Browns would continue to play that poorly the way they played Monday night, but maybe Ray's right. I mean, momentum even in a negative sense, you'd expect the opposite to happen then.
I don't even think
I understood what I was just saying.
See if Joseph.
Sometimes you just need to kill my mind.
Joseph in Tacoma, do you know what he was just trying
like
to
when
say
I'm,
there?
When I'm talking, I need to start doing something like this, and then maybe every once in a while go like this, and then to go like this again.
Joseph, did you understand what Jim was trying to say?
I don't even think he understood what he was trying to say.
I know, Joseph. I'm sober even.
You have no excuse. First off, Jim, the Seahawks are going to win. So you're wrong for that, bro. You're wrong.
Okay, bro.
Listening to that back,
I'm confused. It was worse than, than live.
I don't think I quite caught it initially, so I kind of went, well, perhaps, like agreeing with you, and then you called yourself out.
I thought maybe, hey, maybe I'm onto something profound here. Like, momentum can work in a negative way, too. And I was thinking that maybe what happened to Cleveland and San Francisco might snowball all the way back to Cleveland with them. But I couldn't quite get through it. And I had to call BS on myself.
I love that you called yourself out. I was just going to appease you and go, yeah, perhaps you're right.
You weren't following it either?
Now that I hear it, I don't think I was. I'm not sure what I thought I was hearing.
No one could have been following that.
I mean, was it something about human nature?
I think so. I don't know where I was going with that. I thought, well, I got to say something right now. I'll just go ahead and start talking.
Oh, I told you Graz's routine on the show. He would often lose his train of thought, but he would just talk until he found it. And then every once in a while, he would just keep talking, and we'd be looking at him, and he'd go, oh, I've lost my train of thought. I don't know what I was trying to say. He would just tap out. But there'd be words, 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 words. Okay, I got nothing left.
Well, it just happens every once in a while, doesn't it?
Oh, God, that was
good.
Is that
for you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll forget what I was going to, or I'll forget. Get in the middle of a question
sometimes
and go, wait,
you
what
just
was I going to ask?
Yeah, and you forget somebody's name, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it happens
to all
of us,
sometimes you're thinking about the Seahawks running game, and you'll forget Chris Carson.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Happens all the time. It's not just you, man.
Okay.
All
right.
But that was good.
Yeah. Next, we learn when Dave isn't here, we can talk about certain things.
Yeah, that's one of those games, too, when you look at Cleveland-Seattle, Cleveland needing to win more than Seattle. Again, I'm saying this stuff because Wyman's not here.
What happens when you say it when he is here? Well, does he shoot you a dirty look?
Usually he'll interrupt me. And there's always a fear that I have that Wyman might literally come across the table and just beat the holy hell out of me. I mean, there is that chance. But you know what? Right now, he's at 30,000 feet going to Cleveland.
Yeah.
And I don't think he can hear what
he doesn't
I'm
have that kind of reach.
Yeah, because whenever I mention human nature and one team needing to win more than another, he's sitting there. I'm sitting here saying stuff like that, and he's probably going, what is Jim talking about? I actually played the game. I was in the NFL for 9 years, and I got to sit here and
he's
listen to this nonsense.
Across the desk and just pound you.
I just think
don't mention human nature again.
I know. Yeah.
You fear Dave. I'm not going to say this right now because he might hit me.
I've seen Dave glare at me a few times.
Really? Where you felt uncomfortable, you thought this could be the moment.
Yeah, and then I always bring up what a great linebacker he was or something, you know, or how I enjoyed his analysis with Rabel the other day.
Trying to calm the situation. Yeah.
Please don't kill me, Dave.
I like that you just felt, I'm safe. I can say all these things that I don't normally say.
I know. Yeah, well,
you got to bring up human nature when he's here, when I'm here, because I've never seen him respond to you on that one.
Yeah, he doesn't go for the human nature argument at all.
Which
basically is going into this Cleveland game. Human nature tells me that the Browns are going to be bringing it a little harder than the Seahawks, given the state of where they are.
Right. That there's more urgency to the game for them.
But Dave would dispute it because Seattle's going to be trying to win the game just as hard as Cleveland is.
But that doesn't impact Cleveland's effort. There might be more urgency to this game for them.
Yeah,
I buy that.
We're entering into the possibility that I might start to not make sense again.
Okay. You want to get out of this before you enter too deep?
I think so.
Okay. All right. Was there anything else?
Yeah. Lastly, we learned that Jim will try his best to get you to root for the Cougs.
somebody's on my side here. Bob, I went to Central Washington. I, too, am Switzerland when it comes to Washington football.
Okay. I don't care who you root for, except for in the Apple Cup. I'm going to try and get you on our side every year.
If the Cougs have more on the line hanging in the balance with a win, then I will root for them. If the Huskies have more hanging in the balance for there, if they win, I'll be pulling for them.
What if the Cougs went into the game 0-11?
The Huskies would have
they'd have more hanging in the balance.
Yeah, I'd root for the Huskies.
Would you?
Well, yeah, because what is a one win going to mean to you?
I'm going to want Danny back. Okay. Nah, Danny's always rooting for Washington.
Yeah, there was no chance he would ever root for the Cougs. With me, you have a chance.
Danny's one of those Huskies that says, I root for you when you're not playing the Huskies. We really don't want the Huskies rooting for us. We don't like that the Huskies feel like Oregon's the biggest rival.
Yeah, he's talking to you like you're the little brother, patting you on the head. Like, yeah. Oh, that was good. You guys did good.
He does that a lot, and he gets a kick out of himself when he does it.
Another one, Seattle U. I'm with Bob. So you've got people that went to different spots that don't have a true rooting interest. You just want to, I'd love it if both were sitting there undefeated. It'd be awesome. But obviously that's not going to happen.
0-12 was more fun, Bob.
You must have just been just beside yourself with joy.
You know what I did? Every game that year, I would listen to the post-game show on the other station with a Jack Daniels on the rocks. And I would just listen and just lap it up.
Wallowing in their misery.
Yes.
Oh, Jim,
I did.
You're dark.
I'm a bad human being.
That's kind of funny. All right, there you go. That does it for us. Hey, you still have about 4 minutes left to head to 710sports.com/win. Enter the code word touchdown. You got to do it before we sign off here. You'll be entered to win 2 tickets to see the Seahawks host the Ravens. That's October 20th. Remember, this code word expires at the end of the show. Details and rules at 710sports.com/win. I want to thank our guests today, John Clayton and Bob Condotta, for joining us on the program. Have a great weekend, everybody. Hopefully we're talking about a Seahawks win, a Huskies win, a Cougars win. Hopefully all of that is happening when we are back with you on Monday right here with Bob, Dave, and Moore on 710 ESPN Seattle.